Fuzzy?
Yes.
Bear left.
What?
Bear left.
Right frog.
What?
Never mind.
That's cute.
Hello and welcome back to Bear Left, Right Frog, a Muppets movie podcast. Hello again. I'm Quinn Rose.
And I'm Stephen Hackett. Hey, Quinn.
Hello. How are you doing today?
I'm good. We're going to go on a Caribbean adventure together.
I'm so excited for this one. I know you are as well.
Yes.
This is the absolute classic Muppet Treasure Island.
It is so good. And before you out there, you're calling foul. We did skip Muppet Christmas Carol. We're going to do that as our December episode.
Keep it seasonal.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, it's Caribbean time now here at the end of October, early November.
Treasure Island, I mean, it kind of has a Halloween vibe to it. You know, they're all in costume. So, sure.
Yeah, we're doing the thing. Yes, 1996. I love this movie. I watched it endlessly as a kid. I've shown it to my kids a bunch of times. And when I watched it last night, it was still perfect. I still love it so much. You know, sometimes you watch a movie that you really loved as a kid and you're afraid. Nothing came out of this that scared me. It's like, yes, this is still very good and just a lot of fun. This is a lot more fun than I think the last or the previous two movies we've talked about.
Yeah, it's just very silly, and they lean so far into all the fun pirate hijinks in a way that I think is endlessly appealing. I also, two quick things about this. One, this movie came out the year I was born. We've reached Quinn is Alive stage of Muppet
Yay!
Movies. and I also definitely saw this a bunch as a kid. And it's funny because when I was watching it, I would see things and be like, oh, yeah, that definitely was like in my head as a kid, because this being an adaptation of a classic novel that I think I did eventually read the novel Treasure Island, but like this was my first introduction to mm-hmm. that. And so there are a lot of like references to things in Treasure Island, but also like pirate lore in general, that this was my first introduction to them. So like things like the black spot, like I didn't know what that was. So when they do the black spot on a piece of paper, I was like, seems legit to me.
Yeah. I mean, the dude, Billy Bones, did just fall over dead. It must have worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a fun movie. It does have some darker themes, as we'll get into it. Like I said, somebody dies in this movie. I'm not sure that's happened in a Muppet movie before this, but it's when it's your time to go, it's your time to go.
This might be, I saw a note that said the performer who died claimed that he's the only person who's ever died in a Muppet movie.
Yeah.
Which... That seems right. I can't think of anyone else.
We'll go with it until proven incorrect.
Yeah, I suppose we'll find out eventually.
Okay, so 1996, directed by Brian Henson. It was distributed by Walt Disney Pictures, which I find interesting because there's two Mickey Mouse jabs in this movie that really stood out at me as an adult that I'll mention as we go. Like you said, it was released in 1996 in February. The money's really interesting. So it grossed $34 million, but they spent $31 million making it. That doesn't seem like that big of a gap to me.
Yeah, they spent way more on this than previous movies. I guess Disney was like, what up, do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it shows, right? Like, this is a pretty ambitious movie. There's lots of big set pieces. They have the ship, right? They have an island. Like, there's a lot of stuff. You can see how this got expensive.
Yes, absolutely. One note that I thought was funny is that at the time, this broke the record for a Disney February opening, which seems very specific, but I guess that's not a big time of year for Disney movies. And so I guess that they were pleased about that.
I think you just take it where you can get it, right? It's like I am the tallest person in my office. World record, you know? a lawsuit arose after this movie. As we get into it, we meet a character named Spam, who's a pig, and the creators of Spam did not like this, so they sued Jim Henson Productions for using the name. And this has got to be the sickest burn in all legal history. So the judge ended up dismissing the suit, saying one might think that the makers of Spam would welcome being associated with a genuine source of pork.
Yeah, I don't know why these people ever thought that this lawsuit was a good idea or that this was like harmful to their brand in some way. I would think this would be a good thing.
Also, you're suing the Muppets. That's not a good look.
Yeah, you don't come after the Muppets.
Don't do that.
One question that I had, I don't know if you have any other insight on this. Was Treasure Island a bigger part of the public consciousness in, like, the 90s? Because I was thinking about this, like, there's Muppet, Treasure Island, and there's Treasure Planet, which is another Disney movie from 2002. But I feel like those are the only reasons why anyone knows about the novel Treasure Island anymore is because there are, like, these kid adaptations of it. Was this, like, a thing?
I don't think so. I mean, this is, like, squarely on the list of you're in AP English, your junior year of high school, so you have to read it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't... maybe people are reading it just for fun. I sure didn't. I read it because I was assigned to it. And it's not as much fun as this movie. Just spoiler alert for a book that is 124 years old. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that they wanted just to do a remake. You know, this is after Christmas Carol, chronologically, and... maybe they thought this would be a fun story to take a crack at. And for a bunch of reasons you said, right? You get pirates, you get the water. Like, there's lots of fun stuff you can do in this world. But I don't think there was, like, Treasure Island mania in the 90s or anything.
That's just so funny to me. Well, in the original book, Treasure Island, the main character is Jim Hawkins. And originally, they were going to have Gonzo and Rizzo be Jim and Hawkins. But then the studio was like, I don't think that the audience is going to be that invested in these Muppets as the emotional core of the movie. So now we have an actual human boy, Jim Hawkins, and then Gonzo and Rizzo are as best as buds alongside.
Yeah, and I mean, the movie works the way it is. Of course, we don't know how it would have been the other way around. But I do think the connection that Jim and Long John have, like, I think that connection is made better, that it's a little bit like a father-son thing, and... you may not get that with Gonzo and Rizzo and Tim Curry being their dad figure. You know, like, maybe that doesn't work as well.
Yeah, I think it does. It does work, I think, better on an emotional level. And the actor does a really good job with it, too.
Mm-hmm. So you dug up that some of the lines were changed in the UK or elsewhere in the story, that maybe this movie was a little bit spicier before it made it to the UK.
Yeah, I feel like, similar with our last episode, we're discovering the extent to which we're discovering the extent of what can be put in a rated G movie. So there originally, for example, was a line when one character says, "Give it to him," and he's talking about the black spot.
Yeah.
But the other character replies, "I'm not even attracted to him." But then when at final test screenings, the moms were like, "No." And so they redubbed it to, "But it's not even his birthday," which is such a Kidz Bop version of that dialogue line.
Mm-hmm.
And then a big one was that a bunch of lines in this movie use the word bloody. And in the UK, where that's a more serious / common kind of minor swear word, those were all redubbed. And so they weren't allowed to say bloody anymore.
Okay. Got to tone down the pirates, I guess, for the British.
The British have very sensitive dispositions.
Yes, especially about pirates, honestly. This movie also spun off a video game, which I tried for quite a while to try to find because I wanted to play it. You know, I have a bunch of old computers. Like, I feel like I could put them to use. I couldn't find it, but there was a Muppet Treasure Island computer game. It seems like it was very adorable and fun. And, you know, not really a video game, but sort of like a play-along adventure with piratey Muppets.
Yeah, I did find someone doing a playthrough of it on YouTube, and so I'll link that in the show notes if anyone wants to look at it. And it's so wholesome because all of the comments are people being like, "This was my favorite game as a kid, and I had so much fun doing this."
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So do we want to get into the plot some?
It starts out with a bang. I will say the first song is fantastic.
I have a posit for you.
Okay.
I think that, so we have watched the original Muppet movie, Muppet Caper, Muppets Take Manhattan, and now this. I think this has the best music out of any of them, except for the first one. Like, it blows away the other two that we've seen as far as musical numbers.
I would agree with that. I was finding myself singing along to these numbers while they were still going. I was just like joining in and kind of jamming along to them because they were so good and catchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we open, it is narration, so like you got to take a point off for that, I guess. But we see Captain Flint and his crew are hiding and then subsequently burying treasure chests. That's what pirates do, right? They steal treasure and then they have to hide it so they can come back and get it later. And what really struck me is how much bigger this movie felt right off the bat. Like the first things you actually see are a camera moving through all of these rocky Caribbean islands, right? Like it just is much bigger. I think there's also maybe a little bit of a wink towards Kermit in the Swamp because like another, you know, helicopter crane shot or something, but it feels big. You know, it feels like a real place, unlike The Great Muppet Caper, which just felt like it was on a series of sound stages for the most part. This one feels like, okay, maybe they were there, you know, and a lot of this was filmed, you know, they didn't have like a full-size boat with a bunch of Muppets running around. It's a movie still, but it feels way bigger. And even on this island where the pirates are, like they're traveling around, they're digging. It just feels like it's much more rooted in our reality than the previous movies.
Yeah, and it feels like everything is just much more full as well. Like there's so much more in the different scenes and the settings, and they clearly invest a lot of money in sort of your general pirate ambiance, but also having all these set pieces that like move and talk and become part of the story in a way that like I feel like the earlier movies were much more economical because they just had less of a budget to do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It turns out our boy Flint is not a nice guy. So they're singing this pirate song. They're having a good time. They're digging. I agree with you. The song is awesome. There's a line that says, "When there's gold in the ground, there's murder in the air," which is just a fantastic lyric.
That's great. That's such a good line.
Yeah. And turns out that's true because Flint ends up killing the crew that helped bury the chest. And it's unclear at this moment if there's more crew elsewhere. We learn much later that there are. He maybe just killed the people that went on the island. But he's out for himself, right? And he's not going to share this with the people that helped him get there.
No, he's a very greedy pirate.
It's not great leadership skills, honestly.
Won't be submitting a quarterly review.
You killed me.
Well, the narration pulls back at this point, and we see that this is actually a story being told by Billy Bones in a tavern. And he is talking to our boy Jim Hawkins with Gonzo and Rizzo. Rizzo is again a waiter. He cannot escape this life. But yeah, they're all working at this tavern, like clearly don't have any money, barely have enough food. Their boss is really mean.
Are they like indentured servants? Like they live there.
It feels very much like, you know, in Les Mis, when they like have a little child who they're just in charge of because she was born out of wedlock, and so they like have a ward, but they just make her work all the time because she's not actually their child. It feels like that kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's not fantastic. The woman who owns the tavern, it seems very unpleasant, but she kind of comes through at the end of the day. We got to give her that. So yeah, Billy Bones is the one doing the narration, and again we get another song right off the bat because, you know, these boys, they want something better. They want something bigger than eating leftover scraps at a tavern that probably smells terrible because it's full of drunk old retired pirates. And we get this song, "There's Got to Be Something Better." And it's them dreaming, right? It's them imagining what their life could be beyond this tavern. And it's another good number. Like, honestly, don't think there's a bad song in this movie. This is another one that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, this is a very classic I want song, very Disney structure.
Mm-hmm.
But they get interrupted in their beautiful singing by Billy Bones back again, trying to get another drink.
Yeah, he was having nightmares. So he came back down. And as this is kind of going on, one of Bones' old friends shows up.
Friends, in air quotes.
Friends.
So his name is Blind Pew. I will say this scene does not age super well, because it's very dependent on, oh, this guy can't see, that's so funny. But the point is that he's a bad guy and he shows up and is trying to get his hands on Billy, and so that he can give him the black spot.
That's right, which is the pirate's death sentence, as we learn, as you learned as a child, that you don't want to be given a black spot. You got to kind of hand it to Blind Pugh. He's a little bit of a joker, but there's a scene where he has Jim, and then Billy Bones cocks his gun, and Pugh hears it and like spins around and like has his knife at his throat basically instantly. So you can see how this guy has gotten along so well, like in a world that would be, you know, probably pretty difficult to navigate. I don't know how you handle being on a ship, being blind, and your job is to help run the ship, but he's done it. Yeah, and he is not having it with Billy. You know, he says, you know, your time is here. We're going to come back and kill you. And Billy Bones freaks out, man. He just freaks out.
I mean, I guess I would also freak out. That's a pretty stressful situation.
Yeah, he like runs upstairs and starts packing, and he's explaining to the boys, which means he's explaining to us, you know, that this is what the black spot means. They're going to come kill me. They're going to kill me tonight, and they want to kill me. They're going to kill me because they want to take this treasure map from me, and that story that I was telling you about Captain Flint, it's all true. I have the map to where it was hidden, and it's going to cost me my life.
He's not wrong.
No.
But yeah, so they end up getting the treasure map, and now they're scared because they know that that's going to make them targets. Billy Bones fully has a heart attack and dies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not funny because he dies, but it is funny because this is a Muppets movie. And even in it, they like look at the camera and they're like, he's died, but this is a kid's movie.
Yeah. And there's at some point they're like, we're in the room with a dead guy. And they all freak out.
Which, again, fair. Although you'd think that, like, you know, being kind of the rough and tough servants at a hole in the wall tavern, like, it's probably not the first time they've ever seen a dead guy, right?
I don't know. They certainly act like it is.
I guess.
I don't know. I've never seen a dead guy. I've never been in the room with a dead body, but I think I would probably freak out. Like, we can just be honest about that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound fun.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. He does warn them not to run with scissors as he's dying. Like, the death scene is very funny because he sort of passes out and then he sits up and gives them the map and tells him not to run with scissors and then dies for real that time. It takes a second, I guess, with a heart attack. I don't think that's true.
Just an extended monologue period.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to get one in somewhere in a movie. So they freak out. And as this is going on, as they're running downstairs, Blind Pugh and the rest of the crew are back. They have weapons. They have torches. They are here to kill Billy Bones and they're here to take the map.
This is another really big scene because they don't just come after them in the one building. They basically burn down a town.
Yeah.
Like, it is absolute pandemonium everywhere as these absolute swarms of puppet pirates are just trying to destroy everything. And at this point, I said, Pirates of the Caribbean stole this, because this literally also happens in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know that they're both pirate movies, like, based on varying degrees to the same pirate lore, but they're also both scored by Hans Zimmer. And so as the movie goes on, like, there's just more and more that it's like, now I want to watch Pirates of the Caribbean as a follow-up.
Mm-hmm. I had that thought too. I was like, when's the last time I watched any of those movies? The first one's the only decent one. Don't watch the others.
Yep.
This is where the woman who owns the tavern actually comes in and helps. So Jim's knocking on her door and then she fights the pirates and lets the boys escape. Because it is a Muppet movie, because Gonzo's in it, there's an explosion. They're like running around with black powder and is chasing everyone around the room, which is a really funny scene. You just see them like zipping back and forth across the frame. But by the end of it, the pirates seem to be dealt with, either exploded or burned, or taken care of by the tavern lady, and the boys are kind of out on their own, right? They're on the street. They have this map. It turns out Jim has a compass that his father left him before he passed away, and I think they realize pretty quickly, hey, we want an adventure, and one's fallen into our laps here.
Quite a fun adventure, seems like. Lots of death and burning things down so far, but I guess that's mostly what adventure is.
Yeah, that's how they all start.
Well, they head into the city, I guess, the local ship port town, and they head over to Squire Trelawney and Son, master shipbuilders.
Yes.
And this is where things really kick into gear, because we get Fozzie.
We do. He is the, quote, rich half-wit son of the shipbuilder, something else that doesn't age super well. More importantly, we meet Mr. Bimbo, the man who lives inside Fozzie's finger, who helps him make all of his decisions.
This is very confusing to me. What? Is this something from Treasure Island?
I read it. I was in high school a long time ago. I don't remember. I don't know, but it is a gag they come back to over and over and over. And I feel like it's not quite as funny as they hoped it would be in subsequent visitings.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be some sort of payoff, but there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, like, if you look at the background to this, a lot of the people who were involved in this were like, this is dumb. Here's a quote from Frank Oz. This joke would never work. It's so stupid. There's a Mr. Bimbo in his finger. I don't even get it. It's such a stupid joke. And this is Brian Henson saying, and then he sort of reluctantly shot these scenes with Fozzie. And at the end, he said, one of my favorite jokes is Mr. Bimbo in the finger. So Brian Henson claims.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this movie would have been fine without this. And it's just Fozzie making bad decisions as opposed to the fall guy in his finger. Which, like, does open a question. Is Mr. Bimbo really there? Or does Fozzie just make bad decisions and he figured out years ago if he blames him on an imaginary person in his finger, then he gets away with stuff? I have lots of questions about this.
Yeah, again, I really thought there was going to be some sort of payoff and there wasn't.
Yeah.
This is probably, I think, the weakest part of this movie.
I agree. But Fozzie and Mr. Bimbo are on board. They're going to use one of his dad's ships, and he's going to finance the whole thing because he's young and rich and he can do that. Not unlike the producer in the last film in Muppets Take Manhattan. He got a rich young person spending some money to help the Muppets out.
Also in the scene, we have Beaker and Bunsen showing up, doing their typical things of Bunsen absolutely torturing Beaker. But, you know, yeah. They're there.
Yeah, they're the R&D department.
Yeah. Of the pirates.
Yes.
And they get to come along as well.
Yes. And this is where we learn that Fozzie calls the ocean the big blue wet thing.
Yeah. Hey, Fozzie. I think that maybe you need a couple more years in school. Let's try this again.
I will say that my kids, who are all elementary school age, love this joke. But they're the target audience, I guess. Not us. But yeah, Fozzie's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But that's okay. We love him anyways. And he's financing the trip, so it's hard to complain.
It is always good to have a rich friend, regardless of who may or may not live in their finger.
That's pretty good life advice. So we next see the ship, which is the Hispaniola. And it has been pre-populated with a crew. We learn more about them later. The boys get on board. You know, they're really excited. Rizzo, of course, wants to go to the kitchen. This is a gag with the Rizzo character, even beyond just this film, that he's always really hungry. In fact, he eats a whole chicken here in a second, just like a whole chicken just inside that little rat torso.
I'm very concerned about the physics of that situation and where he put the chicken, but okay.
He's going to have some heartburn. And this is where we meet the cook, which is Long John Silver, played by Tim Curry. You and I were speaking before we recorded. We both love his performance in this movie. It's fantastic. He does just an amazing job with his character. But it turns out that Long John has a surprise, and that he only has one leg. And this was a very specific warning given by Billy Bones that if a man with one leg, you know, comes after you, like you need to be aware of this. And it really freaks the boys out. And, you know, they're trying to like back away. And, you know, Long John kind of makes a joke about it. He explains what happened. You know, he's been at sea for a long time and was in a battle and lost his leg in service of the country. And he doesn't play it up like he's a hero, but he's explaining what happened and then sort of jokes about it. And then we meet maybe the most annoying character on the ship, his lobster Polly.
Yeah. He has a lobster on his little shoulder instead of a parrot's because of course he does. Tim Curry is great in this movie, though, and even though he is the antagonist, ultimately, I do support him, and I think that he should win because he's Tim Curry and he's very good.
Yeah. There's also a little joke in here, like, aren't y'all supposed to have parrots? And like they're like, parrots? Like, well, that's a silly idea. I like the idea that maybe the lobster tricked Long John to think that he's supposed to have a lobster. I don't know. It's pretty funny.
They're both just playing a long-term prank on everyone around them. We also meet Sam Eagle here, who has a character name, but it's just Sam Eagle in almost every conceivable way.
Yeah, he's Mr. Earl, but yeah, he is playing himself, if you will.
And he announces a very important piece of information, which is that the captain is arriving, and the captain has an fierce temper, and that he will throw you overboard the slightest provocation, and that he is a very powerful, powerful man. And we are watching the carriage come up with dramatic music as it bursts through the streets and almost hits a bunch of people and pulls up through to the ship, and out comes this old curmudgeonly man, and then he steps aside and we see Kermit in his little sailor's outfit,
which is on the cowboy boot level of cuteness, just for the record.
It's so good. He's got a little captain's outfit.
Yeah, it's really great. It is really funny, this introduction, because we don't know it's going to be Kermit, right? It's a surprise to us. Mr. Earl says that he's a raging volcano full of demons.
Same.
Yeah, it's really good. So his name is Captain Smollett, and he comes aboard, and he notices a handrail is dusty. And Mr. Earl's like, oh gosh, he's furious, and he tells the crew member who left the rail dusty, you're gonna be punished. You're gonna walk the plank or whatever he says. And Smollett stops him. And then we see that Smollett actually knew Jim Hawkins' father, and he calls him a good man. So we're beginning to see this connection that Smollett and Jim are going to have in the rest of this film, that Smollett's older, wiser, and I think that this sort of sets up that he's looking out for Jim because maybe no one else is.
Yeah. He's also very chill, and every time Mr. Earl is like, walk the plank, Smollett's just like, I didn't say that. please stop trying to kill people for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, don't put words in my mouth. This is where we see Rizzo's side hustle, which is just a lovely little detail. So he's selling cruise tickets on the ship. He says they put the rat in Pyrat. It's very good. And so all through the film, we see these scenes happening with the main cast. And then like in the foreground or over someone's shoulder, there'll be a rat character dressed up, you know, some Caribbean or Hawaiian outfit, drinking margaritas or, you know, tanning in the sun or just like having a good old vacation time.
They're just on a cruise on an authentic pirate ship, having the best time of their life.
Mm-hmm. It gets meta later where the tour guide tells them as they're passing by a scene that's unfolding in the movie that, oh, this is where they shot Muppet Treasure Island. Like it gets that sort of weird Muppety meta level. And I mean, this movie does break the third wall, fourth wall, fifth wall. How many walls are there? I never remember.
There's an infinite number of walls.
They break the infinite number of walls and talk to us directly, like, you know, his death is supposed to be a kid's movie. I mean, it's kind of talking to the audience, but I think the rat cruise is as meta as this movie gets. They've toned that way down from the first movie, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is toned down, but I do feel like having just the rats on a cruise as a concept is... It's not exactly breaking the fourth wall most of the time. They do sometimes, but it's just, like, so meta because they also are just, like, chilling and sort of watching what's going on alongside you, but they're also, you know, playing games on the deck and trying to suntan and stuff.
Yeah. I really love it. It is just, like, classic Muppet goofiness to me.
Yes. And even they do keep it very light, even with all of the pirate shenanigans, but... Mm-hmm. If ever there was going to be a moment where it does get a little heavy with the sort of the source material dependencies, and then it cuts to, like, rats on a cruise, and you're like, mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, Muppets.
Yeah. Rizzo has apparently hired Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem to play music on the cruise. It's a good, nice way to get the band in here in this movie, I thought.
Yep. They play a very good song.
They do, yeah. We get Sailing for Adventure, which is kind of... I guess it's kind of like, it's not part two, it's a different song, but it's kind of an answer to the song the boys sang in the tavern. Like, you know, we want something better, we want something more. And now we see that it is underway. Hey ho, we'll go anywhere the wind is blowing. Manly men are we.
Sailing for adventure on the deep blue sea. Safely now, Mr. Silver. Let's not get
slow. We also see Kermit singing as Captain Smollett, and Sam Eagle's like, wait, what? You're like, what? Why are you singing? You know, you're supposed to be this volcano full of demons, but yeah, that's not who Smollett is.
Hey, you can have a volcano full of demons and also enjoy a good tune.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to judge.
He contains layers.
That's right, he's very complicated.
Well, after they... get going on their little adventure. They have roll call, and it's deeply concerning. Smollett is not pleased with some of the crew members that he sees during roll call.
Yeah.
Got dead Tom, real old, wait, what is it? Old Tom, real old Tom, and dead Tom.
Dead Tom, yeah. Headless Bill is in there.
Yeah, he has a hard time saying I, so he has to raise his hand instead.
Yeah, and it's a mix of Muppets and human actors. Yeah, this crew is not fantastic, right? They're very clearly shady at best, if not, you know, outright criminal at worst. And it turns out that our old friend Mr. Bimbo took advice from Long John Silver. I don't know how that works. Did Long John talk to Fozzie's finger? How did Mr. Bimbo get the information? I don't know. But they were hired on advice of Long John Silver. And this definitely concerns Kermit, as Kermit Smollett, Captain Smollett, very concerned about this crew and wants to keep a close eye on them, and actually goes as far as banning alcohol on the ship. I think in an attempt to help maintain some sort of order with the crew.
Which does seem like a pretty extreme move for a sea voyage. I thought drinking was kind of one of the main appeals and the main activities you can do on a ship.
Yeah, but also, like, if you're drinking and then you got to, like, climb up a pole and fix a sail, I don't know, I feel like you'd want your facilities to be intact for that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't say it was a good idea, but I do think it is one of their main activities in sort of normal times.
Sure.
Kermit says, nope, sober voyage. And everybody has to be on their toes at all times.
Mm-hmm. This disappoints Long John Silver because he had come in to serve booze to the officers to get them, you know, to set the voyage off right. And Long John leaves. Jim follows him and leaves behind his buddies. Rizzo and Gonzo are left with the captain. And this is where we start to see Jim and Long John... their relationship begin, and of course we know that Long John is a bad dude, but Jim hasn't clued in on that, so he is, you know, just kind of, he's soaking it all in, right? This is probably his first time out in the world. You know, his dad died when he was really little. And I think he kind of is attracted to this relationship because Long John is kind of taking him under his wing a little bit. And it, that really does pay off later. This relationship, this kind of emotional attachment between these two becomes a big point at the end of the film. And I think they're setting it up here. And honestly, like I believe it. Like I believe that Jim would be sort of amazed at Long John. And even with like the warning about the leg situation, I think that he views Long John as like somebody who's really cool and could teach him things. And like it just offers excitement and adventure. And so Jim just falls in line.
Yeah, their relationship starts out like in this really good place, honestly. In this scene here, they're looking at the stars and Long John's teaching him how to find the North Star and to navigate. And it honestly is like pretty nice. They bond about how their dads both died at sea. But there is also still, you know, we as the audience know there is this undercurrent too of what Long John is up to.
Mm-hmm.
He's making these jokes about how he's going to steal Hawkins' compass. And he's also trying to get more information about where the map is leading them.
Yeah. And Jim just doesn't see it, right? He's maybe too young or naive to understand that Long John is trying to play him. We see it though, and I think it's smart of this film to put this early on so we are aware of what's actually going on, right? It puts us in a position of knowledge that the Jim and his friends don't have yet. And we even see a little bit of that with Smollett, right? As the night falls, Smollett is looking sadly at a picture of Miss Piggy. So we don't know what's going on there yet either. But we're being set up for like the future acts in this movie of there's a lot of like interrelationship stuff going on here. And I kind of got a hand to this movie. I think one reason it has really held up for the most part is that all these relationships are really understandable. You know, in the first two Muppet movies, it's sort of like friendship and music and that sort of thing, right? And then Muppets Take Manhattan, you have Kermit and Jenny and their connection and Piggy being jealous, and that feels very real, right? Like you could almost plug yourself into that equation. And I think this movie takes that a step further. It's like, yeah, like I can totally see how a young boy would be naive to this, to someone wanting to take advantage of him in this way. You can see when Smollett's relationship with Miss Piggy is revealed later in the film, you can see how they got there, right? And I think that's kind of one of the tricks of this movie being fun, even for us as adults, that, yeah, like as a kid, I didn't pick up on all that subtext, but the adults do, and it has given this movie longevity that it might not have had if it was just a movie without sort of that undercurrent.
Yeah, I feel like this is where the source material really helps them out because they have all these existing frameworks and relationships from the novel, and they're able to adapt those pretty cleanly onto our Muppet and human characters, but keeping what the structure has already been laid out in terms of these interconnected relationships that are deeper than just like Kermit and Fozzie are best friends, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So at this point, Smollett has actually been trying to get the map from Jim for a little while, and Jim's like, no, it's my map, you can't have it. But then we have an incident where Rizzo and Gonzo get kidnapped by a portion of the crew,
mm-hmm.
Including our terrible lobster friend.
Yeah, dang it, Polly.
Come on, Polly. We definitely saw this coming, but we're still disappointed. We get a little bit of Muppet humor here as Gonzo is stretched out and it just keeps getting longer and longer. But then Sam Eagle, Mr. Earl, shows up, locks the kidnappers up. And then Smollett is like, okay, Jim, you've got to give me this map.
Right.
Like, we're clearly having a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
I need it for safekeeping.
Yeah. The Muppet humor is really good. There's a shot where Gonzo is out on the ship deck and his arms and legs are like flapping in the breeze and they're like 15 feet long. I mean, it is really pretty funny. And, Bunsen and Beaker have a solution for this. And so they end up, you know, getting his arms and legs back to a normal length, which is good. It is very Muppety, but yeah, I love that shot. His arms and legs, like, I think his arm is like going around Captain Smollett, like patting him on the belly or something, and Kermit's sitting 15 feet away. It's great.
Some Elastigirl content.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So yeah, so this is clearly like there's a situation, right? We have this crew, they want the map. But that kind of gets put on hold because Mother Nature is not helping them. They're on a giant ship and there's no wind. And a little musical number called Cabin Fever breaks out, which is the musical highlight of the film, I think.
I got cabin fever! I've got it too! Cabin fever!
I got cabin fever. It's burning in my brain.
I got the cabin fever. It's driving me insane.
We got cabin fever.
It's so much fun. It's so well done. And, like, there's tons of different puppet involvement and dancing and all of that stuff. It also is kind of an anthem for our time, I think.
It's very 2020.
Cabin fever. Who doesn't have it?
Yeah. I would recommend if you're watching this film, watch this sequence more than once because there are lots of little details like in the background of characters doing funny stuff that you don't catch the first time. It is really dense. But it is absolutely fantastic. They're all losing their minds because they're just stuck on the ship. They haven't moved. And then, like, the wind comes back, and it flips, like, they did the song, but without all the costumes and stuff. Like, they're like, you know, oh, like, whoa, that was weird. I feel kind of weird. And then one of the prisoners is like, did you guys hear that song? You know, it's kind of referential in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
So the song winds down and Long John goes to visit the prisoners and Hawkins comes in to give them their food. Jim slips then to Long John that he had to give the map over. And this is where, okay, if you were in any doubt that Long John was a bad dude, this cements it, right? You get sort of like creepy music showing he's a bad guy. He's getting his plans in order. And then he puts this plan into action, taking advantage of Mr. Earl, Sam Eagle, you know, telling the story that, look, I was on the ship once and we ran ashore and a bunch of men died in lifeboats that were not safe. And no one tested the lifeboats, so no one knew. And it was foggy, just like tonight, right? And you can see Mr. Earl thinking like, oh gosh, this could be us. We need to take it, you know, we need to take a look at this. And so he's tricked Mr. Earl into getting into the boat. And this is where the plan really hinged. He says, hey, you know, let me hold on to your jacket and hat for you so you don't lose them in the water. Do you want me to hold your keys too? You know, just very casually. And he hands over the keys, which means Long John now can do basically what he wants on board. And Mr. Earl is just cast off into the fog.
I guess Smollett failed to mention to Mr. Earl that we were suspicious of Long John.
Yeah, why didn't that come up? Like, Mr. Earl is the one who came across the kidnap situation. Like, I guess he was oblivious to it. We do see later that Mr. Earl was like, I'm beginning to think he's not very trustworthy. It's like, yeah, no kidding, bud. So maybe he's not as good at reading people as he thinks he is.
Well, I guess he is here as the cook, you know, easy to be underestimated if you're not paying attention.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. He's just, you know, the lowly cook. Long John even refers to himself that way. And the next morning, Long John kind of sets it up that, hey, you know, we can't find Mr. Earl. We just found his hat. He seems that he's fallen overboard or he's drowned. And Smollett holds a service, and it's very sad. And at this point, the audience thinks that he's dead. Like, we don't know what happens to him, but it has opened the door for Long John and his crew to do basically what they want now that Mr. Earl's out of the picture. It's a really good plan on Long John's part.
Yeah, and they even use sort of the distraction of the service to go and steal the map because they know that Smoa is busy off talking about his dear departed friend. And so works out, they get the map. And then this is where Jim and Gonzo and Rizzo end up catching on to what's going on, because they are down in the lower deck somewhere eating a bunch of apples, kind of hidden from main view, and they hear the prisoners who previously kidnapped them talking about their sort of evil plan to get Smollett. And then Long John shows up and is like, "How dare you?" And they're like, "Yeah, our boy." And Long John's like, "If you mutiny before my say so, I'll throw you off myself."
Yeah. They're like, "Oh, or, no."
And they're like, "Ah."
Yeah, yeah. It's a great turn, right? I mean, it's a fantastic reveal to Jim and his buddies. And again, they've eaten a lot of food. That barrel was full of apples. It's very upsetting. That's a lot of fruit.
Yeah, they were not going to make this whole voyage, so it's a good thing that they're getting rid of the crew and stuff.
Yeah. They're going to starve to death if they don't, because Rizzo ate all the rations. So now everyone, you know, the audience knows, Jim knows, and the boys rush to tell Captain Smollett, and Smollett is really quick on his feet in thinking, and at this point they've spotted land. And he tells Long John, "Hey, you and take whatever crew you want, go ahead to the island, look for food and water, and, you know, we'll be here." And this all happens within a few moments. Like, Smollett really has this plan to get them off the boat, and it would have worked, except that Long John is tricky, and he ends up tricking Jim to, like, handing him his crutch. And then he pulls Jim over into their lifeboat. So Smollett's plan of, "Hey, we'll leave them on the island for like a year. We'll come back and, you know, they would have calmed down and we'll rescue them in a year." Which probably would have actually been murder. Like, you don't know what's on that island, you know, but it doesn't work because they have Jim, and it turns from we're just going to abandon them here into a rescue mission pretty quickly.
Yeah. So they're off to try to figure out that situation. And meanwhile, the crew have taken Jim ashore and they're like, "Great, you should become one of us now. We're cool." And he's like, "You guys are pirates." And then this cues up Tim Curry's song, which is great. And this is one of my favorite numbers from the movie.
"Hey, ho, ho, it's one for all for one. And we'll share a chair alike with you and love you like a son. We're gentlemen of fortune, and that's what we're proud to be. And when you're a professional pirate..."
Long John Silver just sings about being buccaneers and how whether or not you consider them bad is all a matter of perspective, and like what country you're from, and if you happen to like be personally harmed by these guys or helped by them. And so he sings about it like they're full of honor and they have their own code and they protect each other and all this stuff. There's also a part where someone jumps in and he goes, "Hold on, this is my only song."
Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice moment too. Yeah. It's a fantastic song. And as good as it is, it doesn't work on Jim. Like, Jim has decided he's not going to help them. And Long John's like, "Look, you can either come along or I can hurt you. Either way, I need your compass to find this treasure." And so he goes along at knife point. Jim doesn't change sides here. He isn't wooed by Long John at this point. And he's like, I guess, continue to be their prisoner in a way. He's got the map and they can't get there without him, so they need him. And it's all getting very, very dark on the island, right? Like, this is becoming a pretty serious situation for young Jim.
He also reveals to Jim that he figured this out and he left some crew on the boat. And so you hear some cannons go off and you realize that, like, oh, the crew that's like our guys, the officers who are left on the boat, are still in danger because the bad pirates are also there with them.
Yeah. Long John really thinks through his plans. I mean, he really knows what he's going to do. And for the most part, it works out. You know, he's good at being bad, right? He's a good pirate. Buccaneer, excuse me.
He's a very good buccaneer.
Yes.
Meanwhile, among all of this, Smollett, Gonzo, and Rizzo are also all on a rescue mission. So they have taken a boat to shore to try to go and find Jim.
Yeah. But they are found. They are found by a tribe of pigs led by the high priest Sput-Am. We mentioned earlier that name sparked a lawsuit. And they have a queen, and he warns them. The queen is very angry. She's full of rage, just kind of how Captain Smollett was described to the men on the ship. And this kicks off another pretty fun song that introduces their queen. Queen slash goddess, I think. It seems like there's maybe some worship elements in this, but they're very loyal to her, as we'll see as this unfolds. And, of course, their goddess, their queen, is Miss Piggy, who is playing...
Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course. Who else would it be? She's playing Benjamina Gunn. That's it's her in the photo in Smollett's cabin. She has this grand entrance on this Muppet elephant, but then kind of in a Miss Piggy style is yanked down the side of these steps by an anteater, like just crashes head over end. Like, it's not very graceful. And they recognize each other, and then she just hits the snot out of him. And turns out that they used to be an item, and it seems like things didn't end very well.
Yeah, because at first, because you saw Kermit kind of being sad about her picture earlier, so it thinks that, like, oh, maybe they're together, and, you know, he's left her on shore. And then she shows up here, and you're like, oh my god, it's Smollett's girlfriend. And then they are exes.
Mm-hmm.
She is not very inclined to help him out.
No. They're tied up at the stake, and they're left there. It's very clear there's some unresolved issues between the two of them that are not helping Smollett and his rescue mission, right? They have been detained. And this is all kind of going on as the pirates finally reach the treasure. So Smollett and Gonzo and Rizzo are literally tied up, unable to help. And Long John, they go through all these really creepy areas. There's a bunch of skeletons hanging from a tree. They go into this cave. It's all spider webby. And here's something I think when I see movies like this. I've thought about this in Indiana Jones, too. If you go into a cave that's all spider webby and you have a torch, wouldn't that stuff all catch fire? Like, it just seems like you're asking for an accident to happen.
I've never thought about whether spider webs are flammable.
I don't know.
It seems like they would be, but I don't know.
Especially in that bulk. I mean, it's just like you're just picking your way through it. I don't know. But they find the treasure. But it turns out the treasure has been found. It's been dug up. It's empty. And this does not go over well with the crew. You know, they're like, hey, we did a lot of bad stuff to get here. And now there's no reward. And the crew turns on him. And this is, we get sort of an echo of the past where Long John pulls his guns, just like Captain Flint did all those years ago. But before he fires them, he sends Jim off. You know, he says, hey, you need to get out of here. Again, like that connection they have, even though Long John is using Jim, I think he does care about him on some level. And he doesn't want him to get caught up in whatever's getting ready to go down in this treasure cave.
Yeah, he even tells him, like, I hope you don't think that I was lying to you about caring about you, and I do want you to be okay. Which, again, he doesn't have a super lot of credibility in that moment, but he does seem to actively be trying to protect him, at least from physical danger.
Yeah, I think so. And that does, of course, free Jim up to go free Smollett and the boys. They can now escape, which is... This is nice to kind of get that going again. But Long John's in trouble. So they've tied him up. They give him a black spot because he killed Dead Tom. Although Dead Tom was always dead. That's why they call him Dead Tom. He shot Dead Tom, killed him. And so he must be put to death.
So they give him this black spot. Again, it's still a very silly concept. I know it's like from the book, but it's still a silly concept. Anyway, but he notices that it's from a page of the Bible. And he is, as we've already established, a very good strategic thinker and is immediately like, you tore this out of the Bible. This, you are going to burn in hell for this. And you need to beg for your forgiveness right now to save your souls.
Yeah. It's really intense. I mean, he's like yelling and there's music and yeah, it's a very intense moment. But they forgive him. Long John holds a lot of power over people. I think that's what we're learning, that people listen to him and do what he says. So they untie him, and this is where we get one of our Mickey Mouse jokes. So the first one happened when we met Polly, and like, oh, you know, a parrot would be ridiculous. What's next? A mouse with his own amusement park? But we get the second one here. The Swedish chef is there cooking for the inhabitants of the island. And he has, what is it called? Like a shish kebab? Is that what that's called? Like a skewer, and you got vegetables and fruit and stuff on it. And he skewers the mousey, and there's like this, looks like Mickey Mouse, basically. I don't know what that's about, because Disney distributed this film? I don't know. But it jumped out at me as an adult that, oh, there's kind of at least one, if not two, kind of weird Mickey Mouse nods.
Yeah, the mouse with an amusement park joke, I think, works well without being, like, offensive to the Walt Disney Corporation. Like, it's just kind of cute and funny. The skewering of the mouse is a weird move. Maybe they're implying that, like, the Swedish chef is going to cook Rizzo, who's a rat, and, like, that's supposed to be the joke.
Maybe.
But it's weird either way.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about it from the Rizzo perspective, because I think at this point Rizzo's still tied up, but it's weird.
Well, they do at least acknowledge how weird it is, though, because the food then starts talking and says, how else were we going to get him in the movie?
I really like that. It's a tomato or something, I think. This says it. It's really good.
So Jim Freeze, Smollett, and the others, and we have this little scene between Smollett and Benjamina, Miss Piggy, in which we reveal specifically that Smollett left her at the altar, which is cold. Oh. And then Long John Silver shows up, and we find out that Benjamina also dated Long John Silver,
mm-hmm.
seemingly after Smollett left her, which is very funny.
Yeah.
They have like a little moment, and Kermit's just like, come on.
Yeah. Oh, and she's there on the island in the first place because she dated Flint after the wedding broke off. And Flint marooned her on the island. So, like, she just went through a series of relationships with these characters.
Yeah, she's having a rough time. I think she needs a new type.
Yes. No one involved with boats. Find a shoemaker. Find an accountant.
A land-dwelling boyfriend.
Yes. Please. Please, Miss Piggy. Yeah, that is funny. Long John's like, oh, it's a day for meeting old acquaintances, you know, and... Of course, the adults in the room know what that means. But yeah, it's pretty funny. But inadvertently, Benjamina has tipped off that she knows where the treasure is because she has this necklace that's made of these gold coins from the treasure. And she tries to play it off, but Long John's not having it. You know, she's been on this island. She's clearly in charge of the island now. Clearly very wealthy. She would have had time, I guess, to find the treasure if she didn't already know where it was. That's who dug it up. And Long John is gonna harm them, but then the Pig tribe comes in to save them. And this is another really funny moment to me. You know, they have all these blowguns and bows and arrows and stuff, and they shoot an arrow down, and Long John shoots his gun. He's like, oh, you have what they call boom boom sticks. Goodbye. And they all scatter, right? Like, they're all really loyal to her until they're met with this modern technology. And then they take off.
Honestly, good for them. Like, protect yourselves. It's fine.
Yeah. You don't need to die for your pig goddess, you know? You don't have to do that.
She'll figure it out.
She'll be fine.
So meanwhile, while all of this is going down and Long John Silver is kidnapping people again.
Left and right.
He must have a lot of rope.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know how big this island is, but another section of the island, the rest of our little team, Jim and Gonzo and Rizzo are out, and they are trying to get back to the ship. But unfortunately, they don't have a safe way to get back there. But then they see Earl rowing towards them, rowing towards the island, just seemingly like still testing out that rowboat.
I mean, at some point, you got to call it good, right?
He doesn't seem to be aware. Well, he does say that he's starting to think that Long John Silver might not be totally trustworthy.
Good job.
He's finally picking up on a little bit. But at any rate, he's in a great rowboat. It works really well. He's checked.
It's good.
So they're all able to get on his rowboat with him and get back to the ship.
Yeah, and if we remember from earlier, the pirates have taken over the ship. He left crew behind. Fozzie, some other of our friends, are tied up. But they sneak back in, and they're able to free those prisoners. And then they have to come up with this plan to regain control of the ship. And they don't have any weapons, right? The pirates have weapons. They have cannons. They have their guns. But they come up with this idea that, well, they think Earl is dead, so let's just turn him into a ghost. And so they powder his face white, and he's like drenched as in seaweed. And he kind of rises from below the deck. And all he says is like, boogie, boogie, boogie. I'm the ghost of Samuel Errol. And they all freak out and jump overboard and run away. Very easily taking over the ship for the good guys again.
You just got to play on people's superstitions.
Yeah. If you think that an eagle drowned in a boat and then that eagle comes back as a ghost, if that's your MO, like just lean into it, I guess.
Now, they are doing really well getting back the ship, but unfortunately, Kermit and Piggy are still really in trouble with Long John Silver. He has tied them up, hanging upside down over a cliff.
Mm-hmm. More rope.
On all the rope in the world. And this time there is a fire on the rope, so it is slowly wearing it away. And so relatively soon, that rope is going to burn away and they are going to crash to their deaths over a cliff.
Remember when we said this movie had some dark stuff in it? This is villainous.
Yeah, this is really intense.
Yeah. So they get to reconnect a little bit, you know, right before their deaths, they think. And Smollett apologizes, saying he never should have done what he did. During this song, there's a montage of the pirates and the treasure. They found where Piggy had stashed it. And the song is, it's another good song. It's called Love, Let Us Hear. So it's about Smollett and Miss Piggy reconnecting, but it's also about Long John and the pirates reconnecting with their treasure. Like, I found that to be pretty humorous and a pretty serious part of the movie, that love got us here. It's going to be great.
Yeah, the combination of the song and the dancing around with the beautiful plastic treasure is just so good visually.
Mm-hmm.
I want to dance around in the treasure room.
Right? That would be awesome.
This looks so fun.
It does look fun. You know, there's coins and there's gold cups and one of the pirates is wearing a crown. It's all very fun.
I'm pretty sure I owned that crown as a child. Like, that's a very common plastic gold crown design.
Here's your homework for the show. If you go home for the holidays, you need to see if that's still in your parents' household. Because I need to see a picture of you in it. I think it'd be great.
I'm going to do my best.
Okay. Yeah, put that in OmniFocus. the song comes to an abrupt end, though, because the rope is still burning and Benjamina's rope snaps. Kermit catches her and is holding on for dear life. And it's looking dark for our friends. This is really, I mean, it's like legitimately kind of scary. Like, they would definitely die if they fell.
This is like In Netflix, one of the ratings that pops up of why things get rated certain things is fear. And I don't exactly know what that means, but I love it every time, especially in like kid shows, it'll show up like rated G, fear. And I feel like that's what this movie would get.
Yeah.
Fear. But our friends in the ship are speeding towards them to try to save them, and they don't quite make it. I don't know what their plan is either, because they are actively speeding towards a cliff face. But okay, one thing at a time. They're heading towards them. Smollett and Benjamina fall past the ship, which has got to be terrifying for everyone involved. But then it's okay, because Statler and Waldorf, who are the statues on the front of the ship, have caught them. And they say, well, you know, we couldn't save the movie, so at least we've saved the characters.
Yeah. It's fantastic. So they're all safe and sound. The good guys are all reconnected. They're all together again. And the pirates are loading up their treasures. It looks like they're going to make an escape. But then the Hispaniola rounds the corner. And they realize that, okay, there's no one on board. They don't see anybody. All of our friends are hiding. Of course, they think it is the ghost again. But not the ghost of Samuel Arrow, but the ghost of Captain Flint to come get them, to punish them for taking his treasure. Again, very superstitious. And they start to run away. Long John kind of drags them back. But then all the good guys, all of our friends, are on the beach. And it, again, another really chaotic scene that kind of echoes the one in the tavern. This big fight breaks out between the good guys and bad guys.
It's a really big sword fight, and it's very fun.
It's great. Gonzo, who had starfish in his pants earlier in the movie, uses them as ninja stars at one point. Benjamina, in true Miss Piggy fighting fashion, goes absolutely wild and just knocks down a lot of people really quickly, like she did in the first Muppet movie in the barn. Just goes off on people. We also learned that Smollett is incredibly good swordsman, but also maybe a little cocky. And so he ends up fighting Long John and doing a bunch of flips. And like he cuts off all the, I don't know what you would call them, but all the like the fancy captain stuff on Long John's jacket. There's a word for that stuff. I'm sure you know what it is. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like tassels and stuff. What is that called?
Oh,
got a name.
Thing. Tiff would stuff. Know.
Tiff, tell us what it is. And, you know, he's like swinging his sword around and laughing, and he's getting a little cocky, showing off a little bit. And then the sword flies out of his hand, because we all know that amphibians, frogs, they have, you know, they're a little wet sometimes, a little slippery sometimes. And all of a sudden, Smollett's in trouble.
Slips right out of his hand, and then they have this moment where they just look at each other, and then he's like, well, you know, I'm a frog. Jim and everyone else is there to help protect Smollett. They have all handily defeated the other crew and enemies, and they all come around, and basically it's very sort of like Lord of the Rings in this moment. And he's like, well, if you kill Smollett, you're going to have to kill me first, and me, and me. And soon he is just absolutely surrounded by a whole crowd of our Muppet friends, and he realizes that he is no match for them.
Yeah, it's very much coming together against the bad guy. Again, something we've seen in the film before, up against Doc Hopper in the first film.
Yes.
And he hands over his sword. He hands it to Jim. He accepts his defeat. And yeah, it's a victory for the good guys, right? And they can now, I guess, lock up all these pirates and all head back to the ship. And the journey's over, and they've, you know, got treasure. And it's all good, right? It all is going to wrap up nicely, except for one little detail that no one knew about, except Long John, that he still has Earl's keys from when he sent him off on the lifeboat earlier.
Unfortunately, no one thought to check his pockets.
No, which, like, I mean, I've not been to jail, but I've seen movies. Like, I feel like they check your pockets.
They didn't even check if he had, like, a weapon on him.
Even in boat jail, you should check.
Well, he, of course, is able to handily escape from his little jail cell, as well as grabbing all of the treasure. And so he just completely loads up a lifeboat, and he tries to slip out into the night, but Jim catches him. And they basically have this confrontation. Jim is about to literally blow a whistle, and Long John threatens to shoot him. Mm-hmm.
Again, and they have this dark for a kids movie.
Yeah, again, there's a lot happening here. Wouldn't it be wild if he shot him? Oh my God. but no, they have this basically this stare down, and this kind of real confrontation of their sort of earlier established pseudo father figure relationship. And Long John says, you know, I can't hurt you. You're a good kid. You're honest. You're brave. And I couldn't hurt you. And then actually throws him his compass back that he got from his father. So now Jim is kind of effectively back where he started. But he gets this artifact from his dad back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice moment. I mean, Long John's like, you have all these qualities and you didn't learn them from me. And we see then as Long John is let go by Jim and then goes off into the night in this boat loaded down with treasure, that Smollett was there and watched, saw at least some of this, and he commends Jim for doing the right thing and for being honorable, which I think Jim needs to hear that, right? Because he kind of just let this guy who was his hero for a little while, let him go totally crushed, right, by what happened. And for that encouragement, that, you know, your father would be proud of you for what you've done, I'm sure that meant a lot to him.
Yeah. It's really sweet. I'm always a sucker for that moment in movies where they're like, me, person who knew your dead parent, knows that your dead parent would be proud of you. And it's like, sure. Oh, that's always so yeah. Sweet.
Alfred and Batman, Smollett and Jim.
And then, of course, Mr. Earl pops back and is like, wait, one of the rowboats is missing. And it's not a safe boat.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And we see Long John in the light of day trying to bail out water as the ship and his treasure sink around him. And he eventually abandons ship and swims back towards the island. I don't know who's on that island at that point because we see that the pigs are all on the ship. So maybe he just has the island to himself now. Him and the skeletons, you know, they can hang out, I guess. I assume that the chef came on the boat because now they don't have a cook because Long John is gone. I don't know. Anyways, Long John's going back to the island. And so he at the end doesn't get anything for all of this. For all the things that he did, he has no reward at the end of the day.
It is what it is.
It's a good lesson.
Mm. I was wondering if they were going to imply that he drowned. like we just wouldn't see what happened to him. We do end up seeing a little bit there. He's like on the island. He made it to the island. And I guess we don't have to worry about thinking too much more about what happens to him after he gets to the island. But at least he didn't drown in the ocean in this Childs movie.
They already killed one person. You can't kill two in a Muppet movie. And I guess the crew's unaware of this. Because, you know, it happens away from the boat, and we see that they're going to sail to new adventures under Captain Hawkins. So I guess Jim got a promotion from cabin boy straight to captain. Seems like a big jump up in
He's
pay.
He's like 14.
Yeah. But, you know, Smollett's on his, you know, Smollett's, he's got his lady back. So, you know, he's trying to patch that up. He can't run a ship and patch a relationship up, so... It's Jim's job, and they're gonna finally have the adventures that they sang about in the beginning of the movie.
Good luck, everybody.
Yes, absolutely. It's a great ending. The bad guy doesn't get anything. The good guys get everything. There's music and friends, and most importantly, the crew is really paid off because during the credits, we see Rat scuba diving to recover the treasure.
They found it.
That worked out for everybody.
They could make a sequel where they figure out if it's actually cursed or not. That would be fun. Again, that is Pirates of the Caribbean, but...
Yeah.
It's just such a fun movie that still manages to have these legitimately strong emotional beats. And that's not an easy thing to do with a Muppet movie, but they managed to keep it very light, but not totally off the rails.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they did a good balance there. And I think even the dark stuff was offset by good stuff or funny stuff pretty closely thereafter. So the movie never really lingers on the dark moments. It's quick to move past them. And yeah, I think it all works. And I said at the top, I really love this movie.
5 out of 5 stars.
Yes. Sorry, are we doing ratings now?
I guess we are.
We rated this one at least.
This one gets a rating. We'll find out if I'd ever do that again.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And all the good elements of a Muppet movie and, you know, combining it with a classic story for the backbone, I think was good. It's something they do several more, you know, several times. There's a Muppet Wizard of Oz as well that I actually have never seen. So when we get to that one, it'll be my first viewing.
Ooh, so, fun.
I've seen The Wizard of Oz, and I know what happens. I just haven't seen the Muppety version.
Wouldn't it be really funny if that was your first exposure to any Wizard of Oz story? And you're like, wow, there's a lot going on here.
That would be amazing. And I'm also sure it's true for generations of people.
I guess that's true, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So,
fascinating.
Yeah, Muppet Treasure Island. Thumbs up.
Well, next month, again, because we are doing Christmas Carol in December,
yes.
We have finally gotten 2 Muppets from Space.
Oh, boy.
So excited to talk about aliens.
Yes. You know, I have a podcast called Liftoff. We talk about space stuff, and it's never aliens on Liftoff. But on this show, for 1 month, it will be aliens.
The ultimate crossover event.
Is it?
Is it a crossover if it's just you?
No, it's just the same person on 2 different shows. Yeah. So yeah, looking forward to that one. And yeah, we'll be back next month.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye, y'all.